You are listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, TWC's Peace Talk.
Welcome to TWC's Peace Talk radio show. TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what work we are doing and answer any questions if people have them. My name is Michael Bialy. I work with Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, Alaska. I am the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator.
And my name is Eileen Arnold, and I'm the Executive Director of TWC.
Today's day is August 26th. Today we're going to be talking about TWC's mission, history, and services. And after the radio show, if people want to know more about TWC, please call any of our numbers.
And this is a recorded show today, so typically we allow for call-ins, but we can't do that today. So if you do have questions, call us afterwards. And Mike and I might sound a little bit muffled because in these COVID times, we are wearing masks as we record this.
All right. So contact information, our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. Again, 24-hour crisis line. 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number is 1-800-478-7799. Again, toll-free 1-800-478-7799. Our business line is 907-543-3444. Again, that is the Bethel local business line, 907-543-3444.
So, some announcements that we have for TWC, because of the COVID-19 pandemic that's going on, the city of Bethel received a lot of federal money called the CARES money, and happily they made an excellent plan for use in a lot of different ways to assist a lot of different people and programs and infrastructure in the community. And one thing that they did is they passed through a certain amount of money from the City of Bethel to the Bethel Community Services Foundation, which has been passed through to TWC. And what we're doing with that money is making individual grants for people who have been financially impacted by COVID-19. And we're offering financial assistance with direct financial payments for those people who have been furloughed because of COVID-19, for those people who've had to quarantine and are wage workers, and or are not able to do their work from home. This money is specifically to assist those people who are losing income because they've had to quarantine. If you think that you might qualify, please go to TWC's website, which is www.tundrapeace.org, and go to the COVID-19 Grants tab to either fill in an application online or print it, fill it out, and bring it to TWC, or fax it to TWC, or email it to TWC. And of course, if you have questions about that, just give a call, 543-3444. You can ask for Louise or Elizabeth. We also want to give a shout out to a new survivor story that TWC staff found when the Anchorage Daily News published a story about an author whose name is Tia Wakoli, and she self-published a memoir called Starting a Fire, Bringing Light to the Dark. And it's her story about the interpersonal violence she experienced throughout her life and what the impacts were that on her life, and also how she healed and how she continues to heal. Survivor stories are at the center of our experience at TWC and survivor input, because obviously we're trying to make our work fit people who are survivors, and you know, not necessarily what we think might help, but what they think might help. So it's a beautiful story about strength and resilience through so many barriers and so much violence, but ultimately it's a victorious story about healing in spite of everything. The books can be purchased directly from Ms. Wakoli, or if you want to borrow a copy from TWC, just call us and ask to speak to Michael Bialy.
All right. Now, let me give you a brief history of our movement. In 1767, British common law allows for a man to chastise his wife with a stick no greater than the length from the elbow to the end of the thumb. This becomes known as the rule of thumb. 1871, Alabama and Massachusetts declare wife beating illegal.
And we say that history to let people know, like, the work of interpersonal violence is, it's got a long history of being legal in British common law and in American law. And, you know, it was written into the law that this stuff was okay. And it took a really long time to understand that that domestic violence, sexual assault, should be illegal. And that leads us to the next part of the history.
1970, first battered women's shelter opens in Cheswick, England. 1971, first rape crisis center opens in the U.S. And in 1979, over 250 shelters for battered women exist in the United States.
And I think the interesting thing about this is that the work is not very old. I mean, obviously before shelters existed, people were getting help. You know, they were running to family members. Maybe they were running to, like, cloisters. Maybe they were running to hospital facilities. Who knows? But I often say, like, I have staff who are older than the first shelter in America. Like, that's sort of how new this work is. It's important to think about this work in the context of history and the context of how far we've come in not that long time. And even though there is still, like, much more to go, and even though we continue to have to improve every day and have to hold ourselves accountable for how we improve, we've come a long way.
This movement is about empowerment. Domestic and sexual violence is about taking someone's power away. TWC is here to help take it back, promoting the process of becoming stronger and building confidence, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. So now that you know a little bit more about TWC and our history, we're going to talk about our programs. So first, we have The Shelter, which is one of the most widely known programs at TWC.
And it's important to know, even with COVID going on right now, TWC Shelter is still open. We're still accepting referrals from all communities. There are times where we're trying to screen based on lethality because we are trying to keep the numbers as low as possible in our shelters so that we can follow CDC recommended guidelines about how many people are in a residential facility at the same time. But the bottom line is, if somebody's in danger, we're going to have them come whether or not we're full, quote unquote full or not. We'll do a screening before people enter into the shelter to see if there is any concerns about illness. We've stayed in very good touch with our friends at YKHC, making sure to put our policies that we're adopting around, you know, pandemic times. We're making sure to keep them informed and getting seeking input from them so that we can keep people as safe as possible. Because we know, in stressful cultural times like this, domestic violence can often get worse. It can often become worse, especially if people are having to quarantine at home. If home is not safe and you add that extra stress of violence, then home might be very dangerous. All of that to say, TWC is still open, still accepting people for shelter, trying to be as safe as possible with our residents and with our staff. And do please call if you are concerned or if you're in danger.
Believing in a philosophy of creating a safety net around the healing process, providing opportunity for empowerment, the staff are voluntary and strive for individual connection, building a relationship evolving around healing and strength-based empowerment. The shelter serves approximately 400 individual women and children each year for about 12,000 shelter nights. Second, we have TAV, standing for Teens Acting Against Violence, a wonderful prevention model that provides drop-in groups where all kids in middle and high school are welcome. TAV, known for outreach and peer education across the Delta and in Anchorage, also has several goals, but the main goal is to end the cycles of family and sexual violence. If you're interested in finding more about TAV, go ahead and look at our Facebook page, Teens Acting Against Violence. Next, we have Child Advocacy Center, also known as CAC, which began in 2002 to help improve the response to child sexual abuse. The employees of the center are fluent or proficient in Yupik and English, allowing them to provide services to a variety of families in the region. Fourth, we have legal advocacy. Civil legal advocacy is the single most effective tool for ending and/or putting boundaries around a dangerous relationship. Providing assistance with protective orders, violent crimes compensation board paperwork, court accompaniment, assistance with divorce and custody, as well as referrals to trusted lawyers. Next, we have our housing assistance program. Understanding that affordable housing is a huge barrier to safety, we have been providing homeless prevention funds to people in the region facing eviction or electrical cutoff, as well as providing safe transitional housing to approximately 8 families and 30 individuals for an additional 3,500 transitional house nights, helping to prevent homelessness in the region and gain more independence. Following is our children's program, providing a socio-emotional skills program for children who would benefit from positive adult interactions. We also do activities such as seasonal arts and crafts, sensory activities, creativity building, lessons on safe touching and bullying, bodily health, as well as subsistence and cultural activities. Providing childcare for children whose parents attend TWC's evening groups. Teaching with a classroom education on lessons like steps to respect for 3rd through 6th grades, and talking about touching for K through 2nd grades. TWC also has a thrift store run by volunteers. The thrift store is a reflection of the community's generosity and a critical portion to DWC's services, providing clothing for people in need. Mind you, if you're interested in volunteering, please do call before you go over. If you have any questions, want to know more about Tundra Women's Coalition, or are seeking services, please do contact TWC at 907-543-3444. So, here at TWC, Tundra Women's Coalition, we believe in a wise quote passed down by one of our respected community elders that there is always a place of turning around. We think that healing is turning around. TWC also offers different healing options. TWC offers groups, including substance use support, spirituality, art groups, and family groups. TWC has a Chemical Dependency Counselor 1 on staff who can assist with relapse prevention plans and understanding healthy and unhealthy substance use. TWC can get people connected to assessments for formal treatment. TWC also has a licensed behavioral health clinician with an office at TWC that people can drop in for meetings without an assessment and without an appointment, depending on her availability. Generally, there are three phases of healing from trauma. The first stage is safety and stabilization. In other words, if violence is possible in the home, then healing is very difficult because things aren't stable. Once a person has achieved physical safety, they might struggle with regulating emotions from day to day. This phase might last a long time depending on the emotions. And pesking about trauma could be emotionally overwhelming and should be done slowly and carefully. The second stage of trauma recovery is remembrance and mourning. In this stage, a person might shift to processing trauma, putting words and emotion to it, and making meaning. Sometimes people do this with a counselor or a therapist, and a person might explore and mourn the losses associated with the trauma and grieve and express those emotions. The third phase of trauma recovery is reconnection and integration. This is when a person creates a new sense of self and a new future. They might redefine themselves in the context of meaningful relationships. They might recognize the impact of victimization and take steps towards self-determined living. They may also find work or a mission through which they can continue to heal and grow.
And at TWC, we know that healing looks different for everybody. We know that, you know, you might achieve the first stage of healing, like that safety and stabilization, but maybe it doesn't last. Healing is sort of not a straight line, and it's okay to take steps backwards. It's okay to be in a circle, really, even. And even once you're on sort of the path of healing, there's, like, it becomes sort of four-dimensional. Like, things become, like, you maybe find out more things inwards, but also sort of understand more things about the world and the universe and being, and it becomes a very complex thing, and it can be really hard and a lot of hard work, but also very beautiful and very worthwhile. So we try to keep that in mind, that there's no one right way to heal, that it looks different for different people, and that it's an intentional thing. People can have a choice on how to do this. And so we try to find as many ways as possible so that people can achieve this, because everybody deserves to be well. Everybody deserves to be safe. Everybody deserves to be happy.
I want to share a little insight on something that helps me stay somewhat calm and relaxed throughout my day. Usually when I feel things become overwhelming, it's a nice little story on Buddha and peace of mind. So I'll just get right into it. Once Buddha was walking from one town to another with a few of his followers. This was in the initial days. While they were traveling, they happened to pass a lake. They stopped there, and Buddha told one of his disciples, "I'm thirsty. Do go get me some water from that lake." The disciple walked up to the lake. When he reached it, he noticed that some people were washing clothes in the water. And right at that moment, a bullock cart started crossing through the lake. As a result, the water became very muddy, very turbid. The disciple thought, "How can I give this muddy water to Buddha to drink?" So he came back to Buddha, told him, "The water in there is very muddy. I don't think it is fit to drink." After about half an hour, again, Buddha asked the same disciple to go back to the lake and get him some water to drink. The disciple obediently went back to the lake. This time, he found the lake had absolutely clean, clear water in it. The mud had settled down, and the water above it looked fit to be had. So he collected some water in a pot and brought it to Buddha. Buddha looked at the water, and then he looked up at the disciple and said, "See what you did? To make the water clean, you let it be. And the mud settled down on its own, and you got clear water. Your mind is also like that. When it is disturbed, just let it be. Give it a little time. It will settle down on its own. You don't have to put any effort to calm it down. It will happen. It is effortless." What did Buddha emphasize here? He said it is effortless. Having peace of mind is not a spontaneous job. It's an effortless process. When there's peace inside you, peace permeates onto the outside. It spreads around you and in the environment. Such people around you start to feel peace and grace.
So what we think is important here is understanding that life is a process, and healing, settling down, can come naturally. We know the brain wants to heal. The brain is a beautiful thing that protects us when we're in danger, and then when we're safe, it bothers us about the things that have happened until we address them. The brain wants to heal. That's why it keeps bringing up traumatic memories. All of that mud, for instance, if we think about the story with Buddha. Those memories want to be seen and heard and dealt with. Just like children, just like adults, we all have the need to be seen and heard and validated. And memories are like that too, even traumatic memories. sometimes that's scary, and sometimes people avoid that healing because it's almost like experiencing the trauma all over again. You know how when you just don't want to think about it, you know, it's done. So you don't want to think about it. It's too scary to think about it. You'll do anything to avoid thinking about it again. That's like when things are, like when the water is muddy, for example. So let it settle until it's drinkable again. But don't give up on the process of trying to get that clean drink of water, of trying to heal, because it's as essential as water or oxygen in our lives. Being well, the process of healing, is as essential in our life as water and oxygen.
Next, we're going to talk about self-care and vulnerability. But first, I'd like to share a beautiful quote by one of our respected community elders, Daniel B. Number one, we are told to speak of whatever is on our mind. The second thing is to make sure you take good care of yourself. The third thing is from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, keep busy using your hands, whatever activity that promotes well-being of the family. The fourth thing is watch out for the things that you can be thankful for. Talk about them. The fifth thing is pray. Those are the things I learned when I grew up.
And going back to that idea of watch out for the things that you can be thankful for, our brains, and this is a survival tactic, the brain really watches out for the things that might be dangerous to us, that might be scary to us. You know, as people evolving, the brain always looked out for like the tiger that was in the woods that might like leap on us. Our brains are sort of hardwired to protect us and to be watchful for things that might hurt us. But, you know, we're not living in the jungle anymore. And sometimes that the brain's habit of looking out for the things that are negative, the things that hurt us even more. It's a practice to look for the positive things in life. It's a practice to look for the things that you can be grateful for. Even if something is negative, or a difficult experience or sad, what can you learn from it? What can you take from it? What's a way that you can look at it that can help you keep surviving? Because we're all called to do that. We're all called to live every day, to be community members, to be there for each other, and to live this life. And it is a lot easier if you train your brain to focus on the positive things and to practice that gratitude. Even just very simply, for example, I'm on call a lot at TWC, and sometimes when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I think about is, I'm so grateful I didn't get a call in the middle of the night. And of course, it's a hard thing to always be on call. But the positive thing I take from that is, well, I didn't get a call this night. I slept all night long this night, and that's something to be grateful for. And hopefully that means that everybody and everything was peaceful and quiet at TWC as well. And those are the things to be grateful for in that situation. And it's something that I think about almost first thing every morning.
You know, and talking about how you feel in itself is a form of vulnerability. Sharing whatever is on our minds to someone can be a hard thing to do sometimes, but it is a critical portion in the process of healing. I want to share another story, but this time it's more on the topic of vulnerability.
The definition of vulnerability is very simply like just being susceptible to physical or emotional attack or harm, like being open to criticism or wounding. So that makes it sound like vulnerability is a liability, like it's not something that we should be. It's defined in really, really negative terms.
However, there is no possible way of connection or an emotionally intimate relationship without vulnerability, openness, and honesty. It takes courage and caring to be able to put ourselves in this dangerous, possibly painful place. We must care enough for ourselves to dare opening in order to give and receive the gift of knowing and being known, the necessary element of growth, healing, and connection. We commonly view vulnerability as weakness. An honest revelation of our feelings puts us in a dangerous place of letting us down, letting our defenses down, of opening ourselves to the possibility of attack and hurt and being undefended. If we reveal ourselves and are honest about our feelings, we might feel we are giving someone the power to come crashing in. We are exposed and defenseless. I'd like to share a story that kind of gives an explanation to the power of willingness and being vulnerable while diffusing a conflict. There was a situation that had been brewing for about several days, gathering energy and escalating into a loud anger. Each person was defensive, righteous, and determined to win, to prove the other wrong. Each needed to justify their position and actions. After exchanging complaints and accusations for several minutes, with voices getting louder and defenses growing stronger, one of the two paused, took a breath, and quietly spoke about the fact that they were hurt. They were willing to admit feelings dismissed and abandoned by the other, who they thought was their friend. They were brave and courageous enough to be honest, to be vulnerable, to speak their scary truth, to open themselves for possible ridicule or more hurt in acknowledging them, that was defending and getting back at the other for excluding the other. The energy between the two completely shifted. The air that held the anger completely dissipated. The volume in their voices dropped. The exchanges slowed and the conversation became about their hurt feelings and mistaken assumptions. It was then possible to have a conversation about how each recognized they had moved into their habitable reactions of defense. But now, rather than holding that position, wanted to clear the air and connection between them. The scary possibility and the part of the exchange that is courageous is that there is no certainty the other person will respond to your truth and vulnerability, but their truth and vulnerability. All one can do is offer the opportunity and possibility of untangling the conflict and reestablishing the connection with honest, revealing dialogue.
And when we think about that in the context of relationships that are not safe, maybe being vulnerable is, it's not possible to be safe. And just like Mike said, if you take that opportunity to be vulnerable, which is very courageous, and if it's not reflected back to you, then the decision that has to happen is, am I okay with this relationship going forward the way it is, or do I need to make a change for myself?
Over and over, we find that being honest, recognizing and revealing our feelings, chancing vulnerability, and letting go of the need to be right, all offer the possibility of resolving conflict without violence. What emerges is the possibility of connection, of healing, and of growing relationships. It's true in our world, and it is true in our lives. Now that we've had a chance to talk about vulnerability and healing, I want to talk about self-care, how it is important to your health and healing. Self-care is important to maintain a healthy relationship with yourself, as it produces positive feelings and boosts your confidence and self-esteem. Also, self-care is necessary to remind yourself and others that you and your needs are important too. I want to share with you some short examples on some self-care practices. Developing a regular sleep schedule. Aim for a healthy diet. Taking lunch breaks. Go for a walk during lunchtime. Take your dog out for a walk after work. Get some exercise before or after work regularly. We have to understand each person's self-care process is unique. Below are some ideas to get you started in developing your own plan. It may be helpful to start with a couple of ideas and build on them over time. Above all, be kind to yourself. Exercise. Get out and go for a walk, hike, run, or bike ride. Continue your usual workout plans, and exercise also can ease some depression and anxiety. Try even meditation. Look up binaural beats, some yoga maybe, or focusing on your breathing. Sleep. Try to get at least 7 hours of sleep each night in order to recharge. Turn off devices at least an hour before bed and try meditation, breathing techniques, journaling, or a soothing story to help you fall asleep. Time off. Take a mental health day off work. Take a break from your devices and digital communities where you may have experienced violence. Get your chores done if it makes you feel better, or throw out the to-do list and sit in the sun. Of course, with some moderation. Stress relief. Watch your favorite movies. Take baths with relaxing essential oils. Make a mug of calming herbal tea. Get a massage. Let yourself cry. Start a journal. Write poetry. Get out your paintbrushes. Play your guitar. Turn up the music and have a little private dance party. Knit yourself some cozy socks or dig in the soil and plant some flowers. Pick me up. Hug your loved ones. Play with animals. Bookmark websites that make you feel happy and comforted so you can go back to them whenever you need relief. Social support. Reach out to friends and family and find someone you can call or visit whenever you need them. Manage relationships so that you balance private time and social time and do not feel pressured to be around acquaintances or negative people. Find online communities that understand what you're going through. Professional care. It's important to recognize when you need to see a doctor, therapist, or natural healer. You might also consider finding a support group like which TWC offers for women facing violence.
One good tactic that we've learned from Shelley Andrews, one of our on-site clinicians who does a lot to teach us and residents on how to be well and manage emotions. I really love it. It's called finger holding to manage emotions. This was developed in refugee camps where people literally have no resources. Like Bethel's a low resource area, but when you don't even have a country anymore, that's a very low resource situation. And we know that people who are refugees have sometimes experienced like the worst interpersonal trauma. And one thing that was developed and taught in those situations was finger holding to manage emotions. And it's something we really like to do here at TWC, both for ourselves, but also the people who are in shelter. If you're sort of not ready to talk about the trauma that you've experienced, or if you never want to talk about it, this is something that can help deal with those emotions that can just be overwhelming and crippling and keep you from living the life that you want to lead. So I want everybody to take a look at their hand. This is as, you know, easy as looking at the fingers on your hand. If you're feeling anxiety, then hold on to your ring finger. This one I know the best because I have a lot of anxiety myself. So I'm always holding on to my ring finger to just manage that. And the way that you do it is just very simple. Try to get into a quiet space where you can hold that finger, set a timer for 5 minutes, and just breathe. Don't worry about the thoughts that are in your head. Just like with all meditation, try not to think about anything. Just pay attention to your breathing or pay attention on how it feels to hold your ring finger. And after 5 minutes, check in with yourself. See how you're feeling. Now everybody take a look at your middle finger. This one's really funny, I think. If you're feeling anger, then this is the finger that you hold on to try to manage those emotions. And I always think this is funny. Like if somebody is really angry, I just encourage them like, hey, put your middle finger up. I will too. Now let's hold on to them for 5 minutes. I'm setting a timer. We're just going to sit and breathe for 5 minutes, and we're going to hold on to our middle finger. And now everybody take a look at your index finger. That's your pointer finger. This one, if you're feeling afraid or if you're feeling panicky, this is the feeling, this is the finger that you hold on to. And obviously, a lot of times after trauma, even if you are physically safe, those feelings of being afraid might come back, even if you're just sitting having a meal and you're perfectly safe. Those feelings might come back and it might be a very frightening experience. So if you're feeling fear or panic, hold on to your pointer finger and just breathe for 5 minutes. Try not to think of anything. Just pay attention to your breathing. Maybe count your breaths. See what it feels like to hold on to that finger. And in 5 minutes, check in with yourself. How are you feeling? The thumb is the finger that you hold on to access feelings of grief or sorrow, because those can be overwhelming as well. So you hold on to your thumb, you concentrate on your breathing, you do it for 5 minutes, and then you check in with yourself. And then your little pinky finger is for like feelings that you're not enough, like low self-esteem, like you just can't do anything right. If those feelings are just overwhelming you and stopping you from being healthy or doing the things that you want, leading the life that you want to lead, then hold on to that pinky finger for 5 minutes. Just breathe. Try not to think about anything. Pay attention to your breathing. And after 5 minutes, check in about how that feeling is. And finger holding for emotions is just the tip of the iceberg for managing emotions, for developing mindfulness practice. There's lots and lots of things that people can do to be well that way. We try to make those things, those trainings accessible for, you know, our staff, our partners, our residents, the children that we're interacting with, both in the residence and in elsewhere. Because these things are, they're a good way to live a healthy life, to be well. And we know that everybody deserves that.
I want to finish with the full quote we partially mentioned at the beginning of the show, that there's always a place of turning around. I've seen and learned from myself and my children and from other people in my village that there is hope for everyone. To raise children is a lot of work, especially when they are sickly and not listening and in their teenage years. They will stray later, but they will always come back to the fold. There's always a place of turning around. Irene Kay.
Before we close the show, for those who might have tuned in a little bit later, we just want to go back through how to contact TWC and the couple of announcements that we made. TWC's contact information, we have a 24-hour crisis line, and that's 907-543-3456. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-478-7799. We have a business line for business hours, which is 907-543-3444. We want to make sure everybody knows that even during these pandemic times, TWC is open and providing all of our usual services. We are screening on lethality at times, depending on how full the shelter is. And some of our other services look a little bit different in that our staff are wearing masks. We're giving out masks for people who might come by for services like protective orders. And we're trying to maintain distance as much as we possibly can. We want to make sure everybody knows that TWC has got money from the City of Bethel to help people with individual assistance for those who have been impacted by COVID and are experiencing a financial difficulty. So what that means is if you've been furloughed or lost your job because of COVID, or if you've had to quarantine and you are a wage earner, and you've lost income because of that and are struggling to pay bills, then that's something we can help with. If you go to TWC's webpage, www.tundrapeace.org, there's a tab that says COVID-19 grants. And you can either fill it out online or you can download the application and email it to us, fax it to us, or bring it by. And we do hope that people who have been impacted will certainly apply. That's what the money is for.
Well, thank you for listening. If you have any questions or are seeking any services we provide, please do not hesitate to contact Tundra Women's Coalition at 907-543-3444. Again, that's 907-543-3444.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.